Today we have the privilege of studying the 17th chapter of Yeshayahu, Perek Yud Zayin. This chapter begins with the words Masa Damasek, a prophetic burden concerning Damascus. As we've already seen in Sefer Yeshayahu, Damascus is an important city in the history of this period. Damascus was the capital city of the kingdom of Aram, which is located directly north of Israel in the area today occupied by Syria. As we've seen in studying Yeshayahu Perek 7 and 8, in the years before 734 BCE, the kingdom of Damascus, or Aram Damascus, cooperated together with the kingdom of Yisrael, centered around Shomron, and together the king of Damascus and the king of Yisrael, centered in Shomron, formed an alliance against Assyria. The idea of this alliance between Damascus and Yisrael was to prevent the Assyrians from advancing into the area territory of Syria and then into the territory of Israel. It was to stop the Assyrians somewhere in the area of what's today the far north of Syria, the south part of Turkey, to stop the Assyrians from moving southward into what's now Syria and Israel. This alliance was forged sometime between 738 BCE and 733 BCE. It's very difficult to formulate a precise date. Yehuda, you will note, did not become part of this alliance, and we've seen the story of why Yehuda did not become part of this alliance when we studied the 7th chapter of Yeshayahu. This alliance, which included, again, Yisrael and Aram Damascus, as well as the kingdoms of Aza and Sor, resulted in an Assyrian attack on the region, which took place in the year 733-732. That Assyrian attack was devastating. It caused the total elimination of the kingdom of Aram Damascus as a political force and removed it from having any role in politics in the area for several hundred years. The kingdom of Aram was removed. Many people were exiled from Damascus, and the city of Damascus was left in ruins. At the same time, the kingdom of Israel suffered greatly, but was not totally destroyed. The north, the Galil, was eliminated from the kingdom of Israel. The Galil was devastated, destroyed, cities were burned. Many people were exiled to Ashur from the Galil. In other words, Israelites from the Galil were exiled. Israelites from the east side of the Jordan, from the territories of Reuven, Gad, and half of Menasheh, that area was also carried off to Assyria. And what was left of the kingdom of Israel was only the small territory around Shomron. Israel became a rump state in modern parlance. And so the prophet here deals with those events, but it does not deal with them solely from a political point of view, but rather from a theological point of view. What is the reason that these events happened? How can they be understood theologically? The basic assumption in all of Navi, and perhaps in all of Tanakh, is that all events in the world have dual causes. On the one hand, they have a political proximate cause, which any human being can understand, relating to political events. On the other hand, they have a divine cause, a theological cause, a cause which results from a divine reaction to how human beings are behaving. So here, the political cause for the destruction of the kingdom of Israel and for the destruction of the kingdom of Aram Damascus, and for the grievous harm the kingdom of Israel incurred in 733-732, is obvious. The direct cause of that destruction and that harm is that they formed an alliance against Assyria. So Assyria got angry and attacked. But what is the religious cause? What is the theological cause? What did they do wrong? How did they annoy God? And why did God allow this to happen? Those are the issues we face in understanding this chapter. We now begin with the very first pasuk. Masa Damasek. Hine Damasek musal me'ir v'hayita me'im mapala. A prophetic burden concerning Damascus. Behold, Damascus will be removed from being a city and it will become a pile of ruins. Musal me'ir will be removed from being a city. V'hayita me'im mapala. Interesting here, normally we would expect v'hayita im mapala, which will be, and it will be a pile of ruins which has fallen down. The idea that this derives from the word I ayin yud, which normally refers to a pile of runes. It's a well-known word in Tanakh. However, we have here the form me'i, mem ayin yud. Why? It seems to me the simplest reason is simply that there's a form of alliteration here in this pasuk. Hinei damesek musar me'ir v'haita me'i mapala. Mem, 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 mem. That formulation applies in the next pasuk as well. Azuvot are aroer la adarim tihiena v'ravtsuve in maharid. Azuvot are aroer la adarim tihiena. The cities of Aroer are abandoned. They will become areas for pasturing flock. The alliteration here is, of course, with the letter Ayin. And the idea here is that the cities of Aroer, which are cities located in the southern part of the east side of the Jordan, areas located in close to what is now the southern part of the Kingdom of Jordan, around the area which was claimed by the Moabites, will also be abandoned, and flocks will dwell there, and no one will bother the flocks. This area, the east side of the Jordan, was allocated by the Torah to the Kingdom of Israel, and we have statements in the Torah that the tribes of Reuven, as well as Gad and Chatzim Menashe, inhabited the east side of the Jordan. However, we know historically that at various points the Arameans controlled this area. And perhaps for that reason, the prophet is including this under the rubric of Masad Damasek. He includes it in the description of how Damascus was destroyed, because perhaps when the Assyrians conquered the east side of the Jordan, they conquered it from the Arameans rather than conquering it from the Israelites. Regardless of the precise balance of power on the east side of the Jordan at this period, we see that the next pasuk moves on to describe the destruction or the grievous harm that Israel incurs. But it is important to note the difference between what Israel incurred in 733-732 and what Aram incurred in 733-732. Fortresses will be removed from Ephraim. But what will be removed from Damascus? Mamlacha, kingship, is being removed from Damascus. So that Israel, Ephraim here is a reference to the largest tribe of Israel, Ephraim loses its fortresses, but Damascus loses its kingship. Ushar Aram kichvod bnei Yisrael yiyu. The remainder of Aram will be like the honorable part of bnei Yisrael. What does that mean? According to Rashi here, kichvod aseret hashvatim yiyu gam Aram. Just like the honor that awaits the ten tribes, so too will be the honor that awaits Aram. Honor here in a sort of rhetorical or satirical sense. All will be exiled. Both Aram and Israel. Parts of Israel are being exiled. We note here that I'm interpreting against the Ta'amim. The Ta'amim require that we break at She'ar Aram, and that Kichvod B'nei Yisrael Yiyu is the second part of the verse, but it is very difficult to translate the verse if we accept the break of the Ta'amim, and so in an unusual interpretive stance, I'm going against the Ta'amim here. So again, V'nishbat Miftzar Me'Ephraim U'mamlacha Midamesek. Fortresses will be removed from Ephraim, and kingship will be removed from Damascus. Ushar Aram kichvod bnei Yisrael yiyu. What will remain of Aram will be like the honor of bnei Yisrael, ni'um Hashem Tzvakot. Perhaps there's even here a reference to the Aram-Israel rivalry which took place in the previous centuries, and here's the reference that they'll all go down together. Vehaya, pasuk dalet. Vehaya. Bayom hahu yidal kivod Yaakov umishman besaro yeraze. On that day, the honor of Yaakov will become poor, and the fatness of its flesh will become skinny. This is a reference to the degradation of the kingdom of Israel, here being called Yaakov. How was kingdom of Israel degraded? It is degraded in the sense that many territories in the north and in the east are removed from it, and all that remains is a small space around the city of Shomron. Mishman besaro yerazeh. Vehaya ke'esof katzir kama uzro'o shibolim yiktzor. Vehaya kimlaket shibolim be'emek refa'im. On that day. This is a description, pasuk hey, on that day, of what will happen from the point of view of the conqueror. How will the conqueror conquer Israel? Will it be an easy conquest or a difficult conquest? And the pasuk here indicates that it will be a very easy conquest. Ke'esof katsir kama, uzro'o shibolim yiktzor. Just as a harvester gathers the grain, gathers the wheat, uzro'o shibolim yiktzor, and his hand, his arm, cuts the sheaves, just as the harvest is not a particularly difficult one, so too will the gathering up, the conquest of Israel, not be a difficult one. V'ayakim laket shibolim be'emek rifa'im. It will be like gathering sheaves in the valley emek rifa'im. Now, I understand the idea of referencing the gathering up of sheaves, but what is the point of referencing here the valley of Rifa'im? It is simplest to understand this as a reference to the well-known valley of Rifa'im, which is located outside of Yerushalayim. It is important to recognize the word emek in the Bible does not always mean a valley in the sense that we tend to think about it in the U.S. An emek in Tanakh can also mean a plain, P-L-A-I-N, an S-flat area which is not mountainous. Emek Yisrael is a good example. We speak about the valley of Yisrael, but if you look at it, it really is quite a large plain. Here too, Emek Rifa'im is the valley of Rifa'im. That seems to refer to, based on the references in Sefer Yehoshua, Perek Tetvav, it seems to refer to the area which is today called Emek Rifa'im in Jerusalem. In other words, it is the area going from the old Jerusalem train station near the La Rome, now the Inbal Hotel. That area moving southwards towards the area around Rehov HaRakevet, the area where the train line runs around near Tzomet Pat, that area which is today Emek Rifa'im. It is, of course, a flat area. It is the area leading towards Nachal Sorek, the Valley of Sorek. It is an area which is very flat, which is close to the city. And perhaps for that reason, it was used as a grain-growing area. And the reference here, Kim Laket Shibolim Be'emek Rifa'im, may refer to the idea of the ease of gathering wheat in such a flat and easy area. And the prophet may be using this imagery of gathering sheaves in Emek Rifa'im because it is understandable to his listeners who are Jerusalemites and who know how easy it is to gather wheat in Emek Rifa'im. The Mefarshim tend to understand this as a reference to the period of the destruction of Sancheriv, when Jerusalem was destroyed and the Assyrians could gather up the wheat that was abandoned in Emek Rifa'im. Regardless, it does clearly reference the idea of the ease of the Assyrian conquest. V'nishar bo olelot kinokef zayit shnayim shlosha gargirim berosh amir. There remain perhaps a few grapes, and here the word olelot, which usually means grapes, seems to refer here to olives. So there remain a few olives, and what will happen to them? Kinokef zayit, like one who hits the olive tree. The nokef zayit are those couple of olives that remain after one harvests, and one can get that one does the major harvest, and one can get them down by hitting the tree. Shnayim shlosha gargarim, two or three grains, in other words, two or three olives, birosh amir, at the top of the foliage. Arba'a chamisha bis'ifeha poriya ne'um Hashem Elokei Yisrael. There are four or five on the, not only two or three at the very top of the foliage, but four or five on the branches. The gathering will be very easy. There will remain only a very little bit on the tree of Israel. In other words, only very little bits of Israel remain. And that's a reference to what happened 733-732, when only small portions of the kingdom of Israel escaped exile. But now here is the key point is what is supposed to be the outcome of this exile. That is in Pesukim Zayin and Chet, and these are, in my mind, the key points of this perek. Bayomahu yish'eh ha'adam al osehu ve'inav kedosh Yisrael tirena. On that day, human beings will rely upon their Maker, and their eyes will look towards the Holy One of Israel, i.e. towards God. On that day, human beings will rely on their Maker and their eyes towards the Holy One of Israel. The purpose of the destruction here, like the purpose of the destruction illustrated by Yeshayahu in Perek Aleph, is to emphasize to the Israelites that they ought to rely on God and not on Assyria. They ought to see God as their maker, God as their master. They ought to look towards him and have their eyes focused on him rather than on the king of Assyria. And the rest of Pasuk and Pasuk Chet also is helpful in understanding Perek Aleph. Ve'lo yish'el ha'mizbachot ma'aseh yadav v'asher asu etzbeotav. Ve'lo yir'eh v'ha'asherim v'ha'chamanim. They will not look towards the altars, that which they have made, and that which their fingers have made, and they will not see the various types of idolatry here. Asherim and Chamanim seem to be referenced to Asherah figures and sun figures. The idea here is that the prophet, while emphasizing the idea of reliance on God, is also saying you cannot rely on altars. What is the idea of relying on altars? It is the basic assumption that if I sacrifice, then God will allow me to benefit from my virtues, which I have exhibited by sacrificing. Sacrificing is a way here of feeding a human ego and not a way of sincere connecting with God. Human beings rely on sacrifices as ways of escaping punishment. They are relying on the sacrifices and thinking, well, I'm sacrificing so God won't punish me. Va'asher asu etzbeotav. The sacrifices here are called ma'aseh yadav va'asher asu etzbeotav. The work of your hands, that which your fingers do. The altars are things which human beings make. The altars almost become idols. That same formulation, that which your fingers make, is used elsewhere in Yeshaya for idols. So the altars themselves, whether you're sacrificing to God or to Nevarah Zarah, can become an idol if one sees the altar, the act of sacrificing, as a means of avoiding punishment. It is not the altar or the sacrifice that is the key, it is the connection with God and the reliance on God that is the key. And the prophet here is criticizing people for relying on sacrificing and seeing the sacrifices and altars as means of avoiding punishment. I emphasize this even though the verse includes references to Avodah Zarah, because the first part of the verse does not include references to Avodah Zarah, and Perek Aleph of Yeshaya does not include references to Avodah Zarah. In other words, Yeshaya criticizes even if one is sacrificing to Kadosh Baruch Hu, one may nevertheless be doing something wrong if one's attitude in sacrificing is that this will save me, rather than if one's attitude in sacrificing is I am seeking a sincere connection with God. It would seem prima facie from Yeshaya that one cannot sacrifice shelo lishma. In other words, unlike other mitzvot, which we classically say one could do mitoch shelo lishma balishma, korbanot don't work that way. That point is also made in the Ramban in the first perek of Vayikra. The Ramban's commentary there, he emphasizes the idea that one sacrificing must be done only lishma. Continuing on with Pasuk Tet. Bayom hahu yu arei ma'uzo ka'azuvat ha'choresh v'ha'amir asher azvu mipnei b'nei Yisrael v'ha'ita shemama. On that day, the cities of fortress, in other words, the cities of refuge cities, arei ma'uzo here I think is milashon la'uz, to take refuge. On that day, the cities of refuge, which this people of Israel tried to use as refuges from the destruction, will become like the abandonment of the Choresh and the Amir, will become like the abandonment of that which is plowed and the abandonment of the trees, presumably the fruit trees. Why? When was there abandonment of tree, of plowed land and fruit trees? That which they abandoned from before the children of Israel, and it will be destroyed. Now, what is that a reference to? The Radak here comments that this is an abandonment which took place at the time of the conquest. In other words, just as the Canaanites abandoned their fields and the Israelites took them over, so too will the Israelites now abandon their fields and the Assyrians will take them over. It is also possible, though, that Yeshaya here is referencing the Assyrian attack on Yerushalayim in 734, perhaps, the attack we know about from Perek Zayin, in which the Israelites, Malchut Yisrael, together with Aram, attacked Yerushalayim. People took refuge, presumably, in the city of Yerushalayim. Bayom ahu yu'arei ma'uzok azuvat ha'choresh v'ha'amir asher azvu mipnei b'nei Yisrael. On that day, the cities of their refuge will be like the abandonment of the plowed area and of the trees, which the Judeans abandoned because of the attack of the Israelites. In any case, it's a reference to the kingdom of Israel now being abandoned. So perhaps this is a Mida Kineged Mida. They caused the Judeans to abandon their cities, so too will the Israelites now abandon their not only their cities, but also their plowed areas and their trees in the forest. Why? What is the reason for this abandonment? Why will the Israelites be forced to abandon their cities and abandon their plowed areas and go into refuge, go into exile in Assyria? Pasuk Yud Ki Shachachta Elokei Yishech V'tzur Ma'uzech Lo Zachart. Because you have forgotten the God who saved you. The idea of Yesha here is contrasted with Yish'eh in Pasuk Zayin. You didn't rely on the God who saved you. You forgot the God who saved you. And the God who saved you is also called Tzur Ma'uzech, the rock of your refuge. In other words, your cities of refuge are being abandoned because you forgot the God who was your refuge. V'tzur Ma'uzech Lo Zachart. Al Kain, therefore, Tit'i Nit'e Na'amanim, you plant pleasant plantings, Uzmorat Zar Tizra'enu. But a foreign branch, Uzmorat Zar Tizra'enu, foreign branch, you are seeding. In other words, your planting of pleasant plantings will not succeed. Because Kishachacht Elokei Yish'ech V'tzur Ma'uzech Lo Zachart, you have forgotten the God who saved you, and the rock of your refuge you have not remembered. B'yom nit'ech tesagsegi, uvabokir zar'ech tafrichi, ned katzir b'yom nachala, uch'ev anush. On the day of your planting, you will, tesagsegi, you will be fruitful. Uvabokir zar'ech tafrichi, and in the morning, your plants, seeds will be flowering. Ned katzir b'yom nachala, uch'ev anush. But there will be this cutting wall, ned katzir, biyom nachala uch'ev anush, on the day of pain. Nachala here refers to pain, mushan choli, uch'ev anush, and serious pain. Uch'ev anush is serious type of pain. Hoy hamon amim, pasuk yud bet. Hoy amim, hamon amim rabim. Kamot yamim yehemayun, ushon leumim kishon mayim kabirin yisaun. This is a description of the many nations who are raging at the kingdom of Israel. Leumim kishon mayim rabim yisaun, v'ga'arbo v'nas mimerchak v'rudaf kimot zharim lifnei ruach uchagalgal lifnei sufa. Even though these many nations are coming at the kingdom of Israel, pasuk yud gimel. Leumim kishon mayim rabim yishaun, leumim kishon mayim rabim yishaun. The many nations will rage like the like waters, but someone, v'ga'arbo, someone will rebuke them, and then those nations will run away, v'nas mimerchak. Who is it who's rebuking these nations? That question remains unanswered in this pasuk, but it would appear prima facie that this is God. Again, the pasuk, correct my mistake. Leumim kishon mayim rabim yishaun v'ga'arbo v'nas mimerchak. The nations will rage like the many waters. Someone will rebuke them and they will run away. V'rudaf kimot zharim lifnei ruach. They will be chased like the chaff on the mountains, which flies away from the wind. Uchagalgal lifnei sufa, like a wheel in a storm. Le'et erev v'hinei valaha. B'terem boker einenu. At night, as the evening falls, there will be fright. Balaha. B'terem boker einenu. In the morning, it will all be gone. The enemy will disappear. Ze chelek shosenu v'gora levozazenu. This is the inheritance or the end result of our attackers, and the fate of our despoilers. Who are these attackers and despoilers? These psukim Yudbet to Yudalad, clearly seem most relevant to the events surrounding the attack of Assyria on Judah in 701 BCE. And it perhaps makes most sense to understand these as a reference
to Sancheriv, even if the rest of the parak we take as a reference to the attack on Malchut Yisrael in 733-732. And so I just want to review the key verses here, or the key verse, Pasuk Zayin and Chet. As a result of the destruction, what should be our attitude? Our attitude ought to be a correction of why the destruction happened. The destruction happened, Ki shachach delokei yishech, because you forgot the God who saved you. And your result should be, Bayomahu yishech ha'adam alosehu ve'navel kdosh Yisrael tirena. On that day, a person should rely on his Maker, and his eyes should look towards the Holy One of Israel. And no, Pasuk Chet, ולא ישאה אל המזבחות מעשה ידיו, ואשר עשו אצבעותיו לא יראה, והעשירים והחמנים. His eyes, a person will no longer rely on the altars, that which his hands have made, and that which his fingers have fashioned. He will no longer see as his goals or as his source of reliance, והעשירים והחמנים, nor will he rely on the Asherah images or the sun god images. The idea of reliance on God rather than reliance on altars or on other idols which one's hands have fashioned. And the hands fashioning here again refers to the altars as well. One should not rely on altars as a source of salvation, even if that altar is for the sake of sacrificing to God. That is not a reason to rely on it. One needs to rely on a sincere connection with God, on a reliance on God, not on the altar itself.